Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Escape to summer with Victoria's Secret's just-arrived collection of swim and other sun-ready silhouettes. Pack your bags with new styles from the Very Sexy collection, like the made-to-be-seen Very Sexy Push-Up Bra, in on-trend hues like green and citron and black shine. Rewind to the future with the VS Archives Swim Collection, inspired by Victoria's Secret's classic looks from the 90s and early 2000s. Plus, mix and match with their wide range of bikini tops and bottoms to find your dream suit. Shop now at your closest Victoria's Secret store or online at victoriasecret.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Laverne Cox Show, a production of Shondaland Audio, in partnership with iHeartRadio.
I felt like I was juggling stuff, just things that needed to be juggled and that needed to stay in my life. And then there were things that I didn't need to juggle, that didn't need to be in my life. But at 22, 23, 24 years old, it's hard to figure that out, and you're grieving. That's hard.
Welcome to the Laverne Cox Show. My name is Laverne Cox. I love a diva. What can I say? Diva worship is a huge part of my life. I don't know what that's about. It started early and I just can't quit a diva. And the quintessential diva for me is the operatic diva, specifically the soprano. And I'm so excited that I get to have a conversation with one of the world's leading operatic sopranos, Angel Blue. And, you know, Angel is a diva, but she's not a diva in any way that would sort of be pejorative about a diva. She's a diva because she's the prima donna of the opera world, because she sings lead roles in opera houses all over the world. But she's one of the sweetest people I've probably ever met. She's so humble and she's so just kind. And in 2019, she opened the Metropolitan Opera's season, saying Bess, the title role in George Gershwin's Porgy and Bess. And I got to go to the dinner after the premiere of the opera, and I met Angel for the first time, and she just gave me a really big hug, and we've been friends ever since. I just want to chat with her about her career, about life, about singing. And we do it anyway privately, so I thought, why not do it in public for all of you? So here we go. Angel Joy Blue is a two-time Grammy Award-winning operatic soprano who has performed in over 40 countries with the world's most esteemed orchestras and conductors. She's sung many of the most iconic roles in opera, like Violetta in La Traviata and the title roles in Tosca and Aida. This season, she'll be debuting the role of Leonora in Verdi's Il Trovatore at the San Francisco Opera. Angel opened the Metropolitan Opera's 2019-2020 season in a new production of Porgy and Bess. She also opened the Met's 2021-22 season with a new opera, Fire Shut Up in My Bones. Angel Blue was originally a California girl and completed her musical studies at UCLA. But now, when she's not performing all over the world, she lives in New Jersey with her husband and son. Please enjoy my conversation with Angel Blue.
That's my dad that you see back there. my friend.
And I also see a Leontine Price poster. I'm trying to think of that photo. Trying to think of where that photo is from.
Leontine Price.
That looks like 70s Price.
Yes.
Is that an Opera News cover? What is that? Just Price.
That's from her Carnegie Hall recital, I believe. And that was the...
Wait, did her Carnegie Hall debut in 65? Is it 60s? No, that looks more like 70s.
That's in the 70s, but I don't actually know. I had to look. There's another picture of her underneath that, and it covers up the date. But next to her is Grace Bunbury. These are just my wall of my favorites. You can't see this side. I have the old Met here. I have pictures of the new opera singers of today. But then I have my dad. Of course, my dad's all over this wall. And then my voice teacher, Vladimir Chernov, he's up a little bit higher. You can't see him. I'm going to try to move. Let's see if I can move the camera. Yeah, there's Vladimir.
Beautiful, beautiful.
And then I have Maria Callas. Where is she? She's here. And this is at the top is, I got that from La Scala. That's where it says La Traviata and the first name says Angel Blue. And I was like, oh, I have to have one of those. I also have a really big one.
Yeah.
But I don't know where to put it yet. It's kind of weird to put up posters. So I haven't done that yet.
It's not. In my apartment, in my LA apartment, I have like almost every magazine cover I've been on, I have posters. They're up, girl.
Really?
In my LA apartment, they're everywhere. Oh, yes. it's a mess. Anyway, hello, Angel Joy Blue. Welcome to the podcast. How are you feeling today?
Oh, I'm so happy to be here with you. You know, I adore you. So thank you for inviting me to be here with you and share this time.
I adore you as well. I love that we just got started talking about like your opera inspiration and all the divas that you and I both love. And you just mentioned La Scala. And La Scala. I mean, it's one of those things, if you're an opera fan, for those people who aren't opera fans, La Scala is kind of the temple of opera. I mean, the Met is incredible, but if you know opera, the La Scala Opera House is one of the temples of opera, and you've sung there many times, and you are the first Black woman to sing Violetta at La Scala, the first Black woman to sing Violetta in La Traviata at the Metropolitan Opera, and I believe at Covent Garden as well, am I correct?
I think so, yes.
And your voice teacher, when you were 20 years old, said to you, when you shared that you wanted to sing Violetta in Traviata, that there would never be a Black Traviata. I saw that quote do you know why your voice teacher said there would never be a Black La Traviata? What do you think that's about?
I think it wasn't actually my voice teacher. It was a voice coach. But I mean, I think at the time it was just, it was more of me and how I was as a singer at the time. I was young and it was really hard for me to learn music. It was really hard for me to understand the Italian and to understand phrasing and all of those sort of simple things, you know, the basics of opera. Also, I believe that it was said to me because at the time I was doing beauty pageants and my talent song was, I mean, opera people might not like that I call Sempre Libera, a great aria, a song, but essentially that's what it is. And so my talent song was Sempre Libera. And at the time I was singing it all of the time and I wanted to sing that somewhere, anywhere, you know, and my big dream was to sing it at La Scala. So I was told, you know, that's a big dream, Angel. Have a little, a more achievable dream. And I think it was just mainly said because it hadn't been done before.
But what of the race piece? What's confusing to me is the Black Violetta. Why the Black part? I mean, for any singer to aspire to sing at La Scala is a big deal, you know? And
very
for any
true.
Singer to sing Traviata is a big deal. It's very difficult. But why the Black piece?
I don't know. I probably...
Because it hadn't happened? Or?
I think because it hadn't happened. I think it was just probably the time. And really, why say the word Black? Probably because that's their own limitation. That was not mine, clearly.
Clearly.
You know, in my mind, and this man, this wonderful man behind me, my dad, who's constantly pushing me at the time my dad was alive, and he's just telling me, you know, Angel, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. And I've just lived that with that sentiment in my heart, Black or not Black, you know what I mean? My goal has always just been to sing opera. And there's always these people that come in and try to dismiss your dreams or lessen what you want to do or make less of who you are. And I refuse to let that happen. You know, by God's grace, I pray that God helps me with that. But I refuse to let that happen.
Amen. I wonder if there's something about Violetta being a courtesan, but then you think about a Carmen or a Dalila who are, you know, less respectable. So I really don't understand. Yeah, I don't get it. But how wonderful Can you take us back to, you had already sung at La Scala, if I recall correctly. You were last minute replacement. I think you had a few weeks to prepare. You had just debuted the role at Covent Garden.
Right.
And can you take us back to preparing, getting the call? It was historic. What was going on for you?
Yes. Well, you know, our words are powerful. We've talked about this and you've been a really big supporter of mine, and I have to speak the right things. I know that, you know, I'm learning that as I get older and I'm seeing it. I made my debut at Covent Garden in January of 2019. And I had just sung the opera, and I went to my room and I was just sitting there and I was kind of contemplating the evening. And out of nowhere, I kind of looked up and I said, Lord, if you had it for me to sing this at La Scala, I would.
Mm.
And I just thought, if it came to it, you know, I was like, wow, you're prepared. Mm. You're really prepared for this role. But 3 years prior to that, I had been telling people, my close friends, I had been saying things like my dream was to sing La Traviata at Teatro alla Scala in Milan. So I went home after I sang at the Royal Opera House, and you know, my husband and I were getting ready to go to Napa, California. At the time, I lived in California, and we were getting ready to drive up to Napa. I was going to sing at Festival del Sole. And I woke up, my manager texted me and he said, call me as soon as you get this. And I called him and he said, Angel, would you like to sing La Traviata at La Scala? And I said, yeah, of course. You know, an opera, they schedule things years and years in advance. So I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be in like 2025. And I said, when is it? And he goes, next week. And I said, next week? And he said, yeah, next week. And so I said, you've got to be kidding me. He goes, no, honey, it's next week. And I said, okay. And he said, you can go to Festival del Sole, and then you're going to have to pack and you go. And oh, Laverne, I was ready. Oh, thank God. I was ready. Because, like, you know, when you get an opportunity like that, and if you're not ready, that's just it feels devastating, you know, but I was so thankful at that time that I was ready. And my husband was excited, and I looked at him and I said, I'm going to go to Italy. And he was like, go. This is awesome. This is great. You know, he was thrilled. And of course, my mom, my family, everybody was. And I'm thankful that out of all of the opera singers, because we know there's so many, out of all of the sopranos, out of all the people that they could have asked to come, you know, sopranos right there in Milan, right there in around the city, and or just on a train ride to Milan. You know, they asked me to get on a plane all the way in LA and come over and sing. And I will forever be grateful and so thankful for that moment. Forever. Yeah.
So you get there and you're singing with Placido Domingo, who you won his competition and had worked with him before. Talk to us about just getting there and the rehearsal process. So you have a week. So what was it like once you arrived?
It was amazing. I had been to Milan before, several times before. I actually did a tour of Italy when I was 26 years old. So I've been all over the country. I understand the culture very well. I guess I could say I was immersed in the culture when I was younger. And I felt like a rock star, truly, because the people in the city of Milan, just that the vicinity of the opera house, is this gorgeous place called the Duomo, this big church, and all of the restaurants and the people, they knew that I was coming to sing. So I'm walking down the street and the people in the restaurant are like, they don't call me Angel, they call me Angela. And so they're like, Angela, toy, Angela. And I'm like, what? You know, why are these strangers saying toy to me? And I'm saying, you know, grazie, thank you.
For the listeners.
Oh, yes.
toy is like, it's break a leg or good luck. It's good luck for opera singers.
Yes, basically. Good luck for opera singers. And I went to this restaurant, and I think this is what really kind of hit me the hardest, was that I went to this gorgeous restaurant. I had this delicious lasagna. And the gentleman who brought me my food looks at me and he says, you are the first Black Traviata. And I said, am I? And I mean, I didn't know hello. No, do you like the food? Do you want anything else? None of that. That's what he said to me. And in English, too. And I said, oh, I said, am I? And he said, you will be perfect. Perfect. And if you're hungry, come here. And I said, okay. He said, we want to make sure that you do a very, very, very good job. And I just, that just made me feel, you know, I think that was
it's beautiful.
Just a wonderful experience, a wonderful moment.
What's so beautiful about that moment is that there's a city that is that immersed in opera, that they're so excited.
Absolutely.
And that he knows it's just a random person coming up to you and telling you that you're making history.
Yes.
There's something so beautiful about that. And I love that we have some video of the moment. There's some wonderful video with you and Domingo that's online. And David Carlin of Bach Track wrote of your Covent Garden debut in Traviata, blues voice, his complete security of pitch, a warm bath of a timbre, and a lovely sense of lilt and shape to the phrases. She also has the acting ability to make you utterly believe in what you're seeing. In the deathbed scene, I don't think I've ever seen a more convincing interpretation of a woman who is desperate to summon up strength but is simply incapable of standing straight. Her interpretation of the end, with Violetta's last false hope flaring brightly before fizzling to nothing, was spellbinding. And she excelled in pure vocal terms, with a strong delivery of the big aria Sempre Libra and Adir del Passato. I love, I mean, reviews are sort of whatever, but what I love about that review is that I had the pleasure of seeing you sing Traviata at the Met when you made your role debut there.
Yes.
Earlier this year. I got to be in the audience and I felt, it's my favorite opera and I'm always deeply moved by it. But that scene, the Adio Passato scene, that scene was so... Oh, I just don't even have words for it. It was just so moving, and the acting. Actually, I have a little recording. When you hear that, what comes up for you, this role that has meant so much to you, that you aspire to sing, that you've made history to sing?
I guess I just think that it's true. You know, she calls herself a fallen woman, and she asks God to help her, to have mercy on her in that moment. And, you know, you said earlier, what's the difference between Carmen and Dalila and Violetta? Dalila is, she's kind of, you know, my opinion, she's wicked. Carmen, my opinion, she's wicked at their core. It's a selfish kind of a thing.
I would say Carmen's is independent.
Yes.
She's and cavalier. Dalila is wicked.
Dalila's
Carmen
wicked.
Is independent, and it could be read as wicked for sure.
Because
she gives no F's.
<That's>
She's like, libre et je suis né, libre et les mourras. Free I was born and free I will die, she sings. That there's a defiance that Carmen has.
Right.
Dalila is wicked. But with Violetta, you say, the difference for you is what?
I think is that she's a self-sacrificing woman. She's a woman who's willing to put her needs, her desires, what she wants aside for other people.
Yeah.
And I think what she said is very true. I would call Carmen defiant. That's a better word than wicked, is that she is definitely defiant, going to do what she wants to do. But I think that's interesting because they are all... So this sort of courtesan kind of a thing, but with Violetta, I think in her heart, at the core of her person, she's someone who deeply cares about other people
and wants to be loved and
wants to be loved
and is indeed in love
in
a really beautiful way.
Absolutely,
yeah. And the way she dies too is very different than Carmen.
And she has the opportunity to have her whole family around her, you know, the people who care about her the most when she's dying. I suppose all of that just kind of, you know, when I am interviewed, I talk about my dad a lot. And, you know, I've spoken to you a lot about him. And when my father passed away, all of us were there. We're five children and we were all around the hospital bed. And my mom was standing there at the head of the bed, you know, looking over my dad. And that's the, you know, if you're going to go, that's a beautiful way to do it with the people that you love the most around you. That's the beautiful thing about La Traviata to me is that in the end, she really does. She gets what she wants before she goes to heaven, I believe. And that's all that love.
For those who don't know, Angel's father was a minister and her first voice teacher. He started training you when you were 6 years old, I believe.
Yes.
Do you want to say a little bit about your father?
Yeah, he was just a like you. He's from Alabama. How do you not like him? You know, Bama people. Mm. And he, as you said, he was a minister. He was a pastor for gosh, I want to say that my parents ministered for like 35, 36 years. And he was a classically trained singer. So my dad, when he was younger, they moved to Cleveland, Ohio, and he went to the Cleveland Conservatory of Music. And he studied voice. He sang under James Levine in the chorus. And you know, he loved opera. And what's great is it's kind of a generational thing. So my grandfather, Grandpa James, he liked Enrico Caruso. Don't ask me why a coal miner from Alabama likes Enrico Caruso, but he did. And he was in a barbershop quartet. And so then, of course, my dad picks that up. He falls in love with like UC Buehling and Luciano Pavarotti and, of course, Placido Domingo. And that was a very crazy connection for me because I ended up singing with Maestro Domingo for years, you know, and he became my mentor. And that was so strange because when my father passed away, it was about, I think, 2 months to the date that I met Maestro Domingo. And it was just very, very wild. You know, it was amazing, actually, because my dad kept saying, when you sing for Domingo, he's going to love you and he's going to help you, you know, and that he did. But my father was just someone who really loved opera and it brought him a lot of joy. You should have seen, he had the biggest smile and he would listen to Pagliacci. Pagliacci is the clown. The opera is the clown. And this man is, he's lamenting in this aria. And my dad would have that on so loud in the kitchen. I mean, loud. But he was joyful and he'd be smiling and all of that. That's one of the main reasons why I sing. Because opera brings me joy, you know. So that's a tiny, tiny bit about my dad. He was an amazing man. I'm very honored. I will always be honored to be his daughter.
And singing is a connection to your father as well. I was just thinking about how, and I got very emotional thinking about your father passing and then facilitating in heaven, facilitating that meeting with Domingo, facilitating so many things. The gift for me of the people who have passed in my life that I feel like they've become my angels. I really do. I get very emotional with because I have a lot of angels. Oh my goodness. So he's clearly, I mean, La Scala, all the things, you know, he's your angel.
You want to know something weird?
Yes.
I don't normally talk about this, but since you said that, you said angels and then you said La Scala. This might sound weird, but this happened to me after rehearsal. We were doing act two and I was rehearsing with Maestro Domingo and the scene between the character Violetta and her boyfriend's dad, Germont. And we rehearsed it and I went and I grabbed some water in my bottle before I went back to the hotel. And as I'm filling up this water bottle, I had the strongest sensation that my dad was standing behind me with that big smile. And it was so real that when I was like, wait, is he there? And I turned almost like, you know, did dad just skip off to Italy and not tell us or something? And I turned around and of course he wasn't standing there, but it was like his presence was there. It was just, it was like the Lord was letting me know that my dad can see what I'm doing. You know, he could see that because he always told me that I would sing. He always said that, you know, it's a blessing when you have a family member or anybody in your life, a coach, somebody who really encourages you like that and is constantly letting you know when you don't feel like you can sing or when you don't feel like you're good at what you do or, hey, there's no hope here. It's wonderful to have that person who's like, no, you're doing the right thing. You just keep, like I said before, you keep going, you keep going, you keep going. He said, Angel, you'll win if you don't quit. My dad used to always say that to me. And I do. In my own way, I feel like I've won, you know, and he's over my shoulder now, but he really is, you know, he really has been such a driving force and a huge blessing to me in this opera career. And when I was getting that water at La Scala, I took that to mean that he could see me there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's so beautiful. We'll be right back.
Escape to summer with Victoria's Secret. Pack your bags with just-arrived swim, cover-ups, corset tops, and other sexy silhouettes. When the sun goes down, opt for bold and blingy styles, like the made-to-be-seen Very Sexy Push-Up Bra from the Very Sexy Collection, in on-trend hues like Black Shine, Green, and Citron. For a glam statement, pair them with your favorite jeans and bring the heat. Because life is better in a bikini. Rewind to the future with the VS Archive Swim Collection, inspired by Victoria's Secret's classic looks from the 90s and early 2000s. For endless out-of-office options, mix and match with Victoria's Secret's wide range of bikini tops and bottoms that offer you every type of coverage, from full to cheeky to minimal. and now in this season's must-have shades and patterns. Add the finishing touch with a limited edition Bombshell Escape fragrance, a free spirited take on the iconic Victoria's Secret scent. Dive into a vibrant blend of juicy guava, lush palms, and summer glow peony. Shop now at your closest Victoria's Secret store or online at victoriassecret.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Alrighty, we're back. I remember seeing an interview that you did, and I remember when you were at UCLA and some of the struggles you had there. And I don't know if you want to talk about that, because I think, you know, you said you were having trouble learning music. And what was that about? And has that shifted for you? Is it easier to learn music now?
First, I want to say thank you for the question, because I think sometimes, maybe now opera singers are more open to talking about their struggles in music. I'm very thankful that my parents gave me piano lessons when I was little. My mom taught me first, and then I had a piano teacher, very similar to how I study voice. I play several instruments. I play the alto saxophone, but I still pull it out every now and again. I have my bass guitar right here. So I'm a musician for sure. But opera presented the problem of learning quickly. How do you learn fast and efficiently? Mm-hmm. And so right now I'm working on Il Trovatore. That's the next thing I have coming up. And I'm going to show you.
And you haven't sung Trovatore yet. You were supposed to debut Trovatore, if I recall, during the pandemic in at LA Opera. And obviously the pandemic happened.
Yes.
And so where are you singing Trovatore in the fall, I think?
San Francisco Opera in September. So I'm just going to show you. So basically with the music, What really has helped me, and I'm just being totally honest, this is real right now. This is like my diary. But with the music, I'm going to put it here, if you can see it. Like, you see those big lines, right?
Mm-hmm.
So those lines are my saving grace, these vertical lines going up and down. And those are just the big beats. That was the hardest, which is weird because I play the bass. So I, of course, understand the rhythm, you know, but that was the hardest thing for me, was to understand rhythmically just how things work. When I started getting better at Italian, then I understood that the rhythm was inspired by the words, by the text. And when I understood that the music was inspired by the text inspires the acting, the drama, essentially. And sometimes the drama is really heavily in the orchestra. Sometimes the drama is, it's always going to be in the text, but most of the time it's in the rhythm. All of those things just kind of came to me. But I didn't really understand that when I was, you know, 20, 21 years old at UCLA. And I had an interesting time because my father passed away. And when my dad passed away, I dropped out of the opera at UCLA. At the same time, though, I was an intern at LA Opera for the Young Artist Program. I was also doing Miss California at the time. That was my last year at Miss California. It was just a ton of things going on. Musically, I felt lost because I felt like there were, you know, opera is filled with many facets. There's so much to it. And I just, having all of these, I felt like I was juggling stuff, just in things that needed to be juggled and that needed to stay in my life. And then there were things that I didn't need to juggle, that didn't need to be in my life. But Amen. at 22, 23, 24 years old, it's hard to figure that out. And you're grieving. That's hard. So that really, when I talk about the struggle for me was the struggle of how do I learn this quickly? You know, singing is, I would say it's like being an athlete because the thing has to be in your body. When you get on stage, you don't want to be thinking, oh, wait, what's the next note? Oh, wait, what's that word? Oh, no. You want to be on autopilot and just be able to go. So all of these things were just kind of going on at that time. And, you know, I'm well past 24 years old now. And I still look at that time and I think, wow, how did you get through that?
How did you get through?
I mean, I honestly think my faith, 100% my faith and my family helped me a lot. You know, I had my mom, I'm number four of five, and everything was keep going, keep going, keep going. Well, remember dad said, remember dad used to say, there was one point, I know that people can't see me, but at one point I started breathing with my shoulders. And so I was taking breaths and lifting up my shoulders. And my sister said, Angel, remember dad said, when you sing, you need to be relaxed. And I had to remember those things. I had to just remember, I guess, my roots and what they were. But also, you know, I will tell you this. I know that God gave me the talent that I have for a reason. And I know that he said he'll never leave me or forsake me. And even in those moments where I feel like I'm alone or like I'm forsook, I'm not. And I have to remember that. I think, you know, it was important to try to just keep going. And as hard as that was, I did. And then I had the opportunity also to go to Europe. By that point, I was 26, and that really helped me a lot because I saw a different, completely different side of opera from the European perspective. And I believe with all my heart that Europe gave me my career. The career that I have today, I have because I went to Spain, because I went to Italy. I spent all those years in Germany, still don't speak very good German, but I've spent so much time there in Austria and all of those places learning, you know, and thankfully I still can say that I still travel to those places, still learning, you know, still trying to keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going.
Wonderful. Amazing. Oh, gosh. I love, love, love this. So you recently made your debut as Aida, the Ethiopian princess at Covent Garden. How did it feel? Aida is one of those tricky operas because it's very, for those people who don't know opera, there's very legato singing that's required. And then there's very dramatic singing that is required. So how was it singing Aida?
Yes. Honestly, three words. It is hard. You know, it's hard. It's not an easy role. It's just, it's not. And I think what makes it so hard is that it's weird because there's not a lot of music. It's not a lot of singing. It's the title character. So with the title character, that comes a lot of pressure, just period, just psychologically, just thinking the opera's called Aida. I'm singing Aida, you know, just whatever that means in your mind. So there's that whole sort of obstacle first. And then after that, there's all of the things that follow musically. I think of everything as just being lyric. I try not to think, oh, this is the strongest part of the opera and I have to give it all. I don't. I try to just be as lyrical as possible. And I think a lot of that comes with what the composer is asking the singer to do. You know, don't do something the composer doesn't say to do. And go with what the conductor is doing. I'm not a singer who tries to out-sing the orchestra or do something different than the orchestra is doing. That's weird, you know. I want to be with them because we're an ensemble. So, I mean, with that, I have to say my favorite part of Aida was the hardest part was Act Three. Act Three is wild. So you start out with this O Patria Mia. O Patria Mia is my homeland. She's talking about where she's from and how she misses it. She describes where she's from. She says, you know, the fresh valleys and the rolling hills, and she misses it. And then she has to sing this beautiful, hopefully piano, high C.
Yeah.
And then how do you explain a high C? I don't know how to explain a high C.
It's a really high note. For a soprano, it's one of those money notes for a soprano that you gotta have a high C, you know?
Right.
Yeah, it's a really high note. I'm trying to think. Oh, for Beyonce fans. Beyonce in Emotions with Destiny's Child, that note Beyonce hit in her head voice is a high C.
It's a high C. That's right. Wow, yes. Yes, that's right.
That's a high C.
And it's not easy to sing a high C. It's easy if you're just shouting it out, you know, if it's like a loud high C.
But it's the phrase in O Patria Mia. It's the climb up to the C. Yes. It's something I do. It's just as an exercise.
Yes, it is a very good exercise. And I think the thing that's probably, I would say, scary about it is just that everybody knows it's coming. And, you know, for myself, I enjoyed it because that aria for me, where it sits in my voice, is an easier place for me to sing. So I was okay with it. You know, I'm not going to say that I landed the high C perfectly every single time I sang it, but I definitely felt more comfortable in that section than I did in the section that follows it after the duet with her dad. So her dad comes in Act Three after she sings this beautiful aria and basically tells her off because she is in love with the enemy. She's in love with the enemy.
It's a mess.
It is a mess. And her dad comes in and he's getting on her and telling her that, you know, you're not my daughter. You're the slave of the pharaohs, is what he says to her. Then after that, they reconcile by her saying, okay, I'll do this for my country.
Basically spy on Radames.
Yes, to find out where the enemy's army will be going. And then the next thing that happens is her boyfriend comes in, and that whole part is very dramatic, but it's low. It's all low in the soprano's voice. So in that moment, I thought, you're just talking. You're just speaking. Don't try to be super loud. And we had a great conductor. His name is Sir Mark Elder. And, you know, he was very sensitive to the fact that that's not the strongest part of my voice. Of most sopranos, that's not the strongest part of their voice. And he's like, don't worry. You can still be heard. So I don't know. My experience with Aida, it's hard, but it was definitely a challenge I welcomed. I look forward to singing it again. I don't believe I have it in my schedule until, I want to say 2024, next year, the end of next year.
Okay.
And so I'm looking forward to it, but it's totally different than La Traviata, and it's totally different than Il Trovatore. If I had to put them, you did not ask me this. This is just me thinking Verdi, because I've been reading this book on him. And I knew he was amazing, but I didn't know how amazing until I started singing all of this music.
Yeah.
I would say Traviata's first, Il Trovatore is second, and then Aida is third for me.
In terms of your favorites?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, you know, Aida, you go through the evening being called names and stuff and, you know, having this crazy duet with Amneris. That's not easy either.
The judgment girl. The Amneris scene is, because Amneris, for the people who don't know, she and Radames are officially together.
Yes.
So Radames is cheating on
Amneris
with Aida.
Yes.
So she's confronting her and she's like, girl.
Yes.
Why are you with my man? And you're supposed to be my servant, my slave. Mm-hmm. But Aida says she's never a slave, always a princess. She never bowed to Amneris.
If you see those clips of Price, there's a video of her with Simon Estes. I believe it's from the Met. I think it's her last Aida in 1982.
Yes. 85 was her last Aida.
85.
Yes.
Thank you. And what is his name? The dad, Amenazaro, father of Aida. He pushes her and she goes clear to the ground. And then she does this thing where she looks up and she puts her hands up. And I was like, wow, that's nice. You know, that is her father. And he is the only one who has that kind of control and say so over her.
Mm-hmm. There's this beautiful story that Simon Estes tells when they sang for the first time together in San Francisco, where she was like, there's a black king. She was still, I think it was Aida, I think. And he was playing her father. I think it was late 70s. She was just so excited that there was a black man, you know, because, black men in opera, it's been a struggle, a different kind of struggle than for black women. And she told him, it's going to be harder for you than it was for me. Anyway. Wow. Leontine stories. I could go on with Leontine stories for the rest of my life.
I know you love her.
You are a 2-time Grammy award-winning opera singer for your recordings of Porgy and Bess and Fire Shut Up in My Bones. Yes. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You also opened 2 different seasons of the Metropolitan Opera in those operas. And I remember we had dinner and I was just like, girl, you are opening the Met singing Bess. Do you feel like that bitch?
No.
And you're so humble. You're so humble.
Thank
but like,
you.
I'm like, girl, you're opening the Met. Like, you are best. And you're opening the season. And you've done
Thank
it twice
you.
Now and won 2 Grammys. Can you talk a little bit about, I mean, obviously, Bess and Fire are 2 very different operas. Mm-hmm. One is 21st century, one is 20th century. Very different roles. Can you talk a little bit about the difference between singing those? And if you want to tell your Grammy experience and
Sorry.
Why are you laughing? Why are you laughing?
I don't know. I'm laughing because I feel like saying that I have 2 Grammys is crazy. But I know that they're not a result of me, just me. You know?
Yeah.
When I was talking about Aida, I mentioned that me and the orchestra, the conductor, were all an ensemble. And when I think of Porgy and Bess and Fire Shut Up in My Bones, I don't know that I've ever been in an opera where the cast, everybody involved was just, it felt like 100% on board. So when you say 2-time Grammy winner, I just think, you know, I'm really thankful that I was a part of that. I'm really thankful that I got to be in those casts with those amazing artists, with that orchestra. The Met Orchestra is just, they're on another level. You know, I just went on, thank God, I just went on tour with them and working with Yannick Nézet-Séguin and David Robertson and James Robinson as the director. It was just really great. I mean, I don't know. Do I feel like that girl? No, I feel like that girl who has a whole bunch of books in her hand and she's like, I got to go study. I got to go work on this. I got to go. I'll see you. Okay. Dinner tonight. Okay, great. I'm going to try to be finished by. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's how I feel.
Yeah.
Because I think that I heard Renee Fleming say that she was asked, does the pressure go away as you get higher and higher in your job, or you know, you grow more and more in your career? Does the pressure go away? Is there ever a time where you feel like, okay, I've arrived? And she said, no, she said, if anything, it gets worse because you're constantly working to stay on a certain level and to maintain what you've done.
It actually does. It gets harder. I feel it gets harder too. And
yeah.
I, you know, it's so funny. I just did a show in Savannah. I was shooting a show and I was starring in it and producing it and co-created it. And it was part of my personal story. And it was so, I was like, I got to go home and go to sleep and I got to prep for the next day.
Yeah.
And it's just such a, like, it's just so much work. That's what it is.
It's a lot of work.
So I feel you. So it's like, no, I got to go study. Yeah. And singing opera, you know, I do a little chirping here and there. And it's so, I did a recording session in December of some arias and acoustic whatever and some beautiful gowns. And I don't know if you know that Aretha Franklin's quote, beautiful gowns. And that's what I would say about my vocal performance back in December. Beautiful gowns.
That's hilarious.
And so I literally went to re-record some of them yesterday and we'll see if it's better. It's just, it never stops being hard.
Yeah.
So I love that you say, when you think about those experiences, you think about all the people and the support and that it is a group effort and that it is an ensemble, because that's my experience too. You know, the SAG Awards or the Emmy I have, that, you know, is something that I share with colleagues.
Okay, it's that time again. We'll be right back.
Escape to summer with Victoria's Secret. Pack your bags with just-arrived swim, cover-ups, corset tops, and other sexy silhouettes. When the sun goes down, opt for bold and blingy styles, like the made-to-be-seen Very Sexy Push-Up Bra from the Very Sexy Collection, in on-trend hues like Black Shine, Green, and Citron. For a glam statement, pair them with your favorite jeans and bring the heat. Because life is better in a bikini. Rewind to the future with the VS Archive Swim Collection, inspired by Victoria's Secret's classic looks from the 90s and early 2000s. For endless out-of-office options, mix and match with Victoria's Secret's wide range of bikini tops and bottoms that offer you every type of coverage, from full to cheeky to minimal. And now in this season's must-have shades and patterns. Add the finishing touch with the limited edition Bombshell Escape fragrance, a free spirited take on the iconic Victoria's Secret scent. Dive into a vibrant blend of juicy guava, lush palms, and summer glow peony. Shop now at your closest Victoria's Secret store or online at victoriassecret.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
We're back.
You know, you're working on Trovatore,
yes.
And we've heard a little bit of your Trovatore when you were doing still in social media and you did a virtual concert. You sang Tacci alla Notte,
yes.
In your basement, I think.
Yes.
And you also say a song that I'm aware of twice, D'amor Zuale. I never say that right. D'amor Zuale? Zuale Rose?
D'amor Sulali. Sulali Rose.
D'amor Sulali Rose. You sang it in Philadelphia and you sang it at the Met New Year's Eve.
Oh, yes.
I love you in that music. And it was so good. The Philadelphia one was like, you really killed it.
Thank you.
I was talking to my voice teacher about Trovatore.
Mm-hmm.
It's written in such a beautiful way. And Ira says that it's really Verdi's last sort of bel canto opera. There were different periods in Verdi's life in terms of how it evolved. And there's something that so makes so much sense about the way that Trovatore is written that is wonderful. Can you talk about the differences between Aida and Traviata and what you're finding as you prepare to sing Leonora?
Well, Aida was written, I believe it's 20 years after,
yes,
La Traviata and Il Trovatore. So if you think just in terms of us as people, you know, how I was when I was 20 versus 20 years later,
yeah,
very different person. Some of the ideas in my head are still the same. You know, I believe, mm-hmm, that my heart's still the same, but I'm much more organized, but a different person. You know, I approach music differently. I'm married, you know, I approach having a relationship differently. The biggest difference I would say in the music for me, as I would call myself a newbie Verdi in soprano. I just made that up right now. And I say that because there are people who have been singing Verdi for, you know, that 20 years, that 30 years, and their take on it will be vastly different than mine.
Mm-hmm.
As someone who loves La Traviata, not just singing it, but just loves the opera, I would say that I'm more in touch with Il Trovatore at the moment, probably because it was written at the same around the same time. I think it was La Traviata, Rigoletto, and also Trovatore that Verdi wrote as kind of considered his trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know, years later, he has this Aida. But I find what's fascinating about it is that the youthfulness, I feel, of Leonora and Violetta is, I feel, my own opinion, is that it's really embodied in where he writes the music for the soprano.
Yeah.
Versus Aida, even though she's supposed to be a young princess, it's more for a mature woman. you know? And I consider myself a mature woman for sure. But I mean, for me, you know, Laverne, I said this when we were having dinner a few months back. I approach music, all of it, the same way. All of it. You know, I want to try to sing it as best as I can and just let that be it for me. I'm not trying to copy anybody. I mean, I listen to a ton of sopranos. I listen to sopranos today who sing the same repertoire that I do because I'm trying to learn. You know, we're all singing the same music.
Yeah.
But what's great about it is that we're bringing, you know, you said that you were in Savannah shooting, talking about your story. That's unique to you. And when you take your story and you put your story into Verity from 1853, I take Angel Blue from Apple Valley, California, who went to school 2 hours away from her house in LA, in East LA, and then had to go back on Metrolink. When I put all of that into La Traviata, into Il Trovatore, into Aida, then that's my Aida. That's my Trovatore. That's my Traviata, because that's my story, you know? And, yes. And I don't know if I'm answering the question, but for sure, those facets that is essential to singing is bringing who you are into the music. I'm not trying to be Leontine Price. I have the utmost respect for her. I have the utmost respect for Miss Grace. I mean, Miss Grace, I had the ability to call Miss Grace on the phone, a legend, and ask her questions.
She's referring to Grace Bunbury.
Sorry. Yes, Grace Bunbury.
Yes.
And I could call her and ask her, you know, I said to her, I said, should I be singing Aida? I, you know, be honest with me. And trust me, she was honest with me too. And she said, you know, she was honest with me.
Yes,
you
indeed.
Know, and she, yes. She said, of course you should. Well, why not? You know, and I said, well, you know, I haven't done the other Verity. She said, there's no recipe for this thing.
There really isn't a recipe. So you got to coach with Miss Brumbury, yes, on some of Aida before she passed? May she rest in peace. You did not get to
coach. No, we didn't get to coach. I was going to go see her in Vienna, but it didn't work out with my schedule and with hers. Good grief. I mean, she was busy. But, you know, I cherish those moments of just being able to talk to her about opera in any way, but not just opera. You know, we had a bit of a chat about life too. And actually she, you know, she's actually one of the first people when I said to her that I feel like I have to have social media. And she goes, but why? She always had this grandmother thing with me, which I appreciated, but she was just really a lovely woman. I mean, whenever I saw her, I just kind of always felt like I just needed to say, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just thank you. Thank you so much for the excellence that you showed. I mean, what a great name for her too, Grace, for such a time as that, you know, for the time that she lived in, to be able to have grace, to be able to move through the world elegantly at a time when people didn't want to see you, didn't want you to have a place.
Absolutely.
But boy, did she have a place, and boy, does she still have one.
For the listeners, what Angel's referring to is that in the 1950s and 60s for Black opera singers, it was very difficult. Mm-hmm. There was space that had been created by Marian Anderson and Leontine Price, but it was still very difficult. And Leontine would never speak of the difficulties others would, which I found really interesting. Grace did a little bit. You know, there was just a lot of racism all over Europe and the United States that they dealt with, and every single one of those singers from that generation, when you hear Shirley Verrett speak, or Grace Bunbury, or Martina Arroyo, or Miss Price, or Marian Anderson, all of them talk about faith. All of them talk about faith. And I think about, you know, how does one, with Leontine, for example, in 1955, when she sang Tosca on NBC, and there were protests. People were protesting NBC. Can you imagine, you know, you're singing you're singing Tosca in English on TV.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, she's the first really Black person to have any leading role on TV in 1955. It's the early stages of television. And people are protesting an opera. They didn't air it in the South. Her home state didn't air it, you know. And she, whenever she talks about it, she says, all I was focused on was, had I rehearsed enough with my flexibility where I needed it to be so I can make the impact that I needed to make. I when I think about that, it just endlessly inspires me, because it just, she always talks about keeping first things first. It's like it's all this, she calls it fluttering and noise. And it's like,
noise.
You just have to focus on first things first. And that is such an incredible lesson for everyone. But then what a path, you know, that was laid for you, specifically for opera singers. But I take it as a path for me too, as an artist, as an actor, and the other things that I do. Speaking of, you know, these sorts of things, you made headlines last year when you dropped out. And you can say whatever you want to say about this, but I know you haven't really talked about this since, not that I'm aware of, publicly. And it was Arena Di Verona, Anna Netrebko had sung Aida in blackface, and that it's a tradition that has really existed in opera
forever.
Since Aida has existed.
Yes, since its inception.
So Otello and Aida are often sung. If a white singer sings those roles historically,
Yes. They
would wear blackface. And you decided you were supposed to sing Traviata at the Arena di Verona. And when you saw and found out that they were still doing blackface, you decided to drop out. What would you like to say about that decision? It's about a year later, and it was a moment. It got a lot of press.
Yes.
And you also went off social media around the same time that you withdrew.
Yes. Well, you know, I feel like, first of all, I want to say I love Anna Netrebko. I've always liked her. I first heard her sing when I was about, I think I was a junior in college. And she had her album called Sempre Libera. And because I sang the aria in pageants, my dad bought her CD for me. And I listened to it in my car all the time.
Mm.
So, you know, I think the first thing I want to say is that it should be known, and hopefully most people do know, that I adore her. I adore her artistry.
So it wasn't about her.
It wasn't about her, but I've never said that. You know, I've never, and I don't really know that there's anything to say about my decision. You know, I'd still stand firmly on what I said because I believe what I said. You know, I get attention when I stand on stage to sing. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. It's not like I was saying that to get attention or anything.
What did you do? Can you remind the audience what you said?
Well, with some help from my publicist, I saw a photo just to explain what happened. I was singing in Paris, so I'm an international opera singer. So I sing all over the place, thankfully. And I was singing at, Paris Opera, and I was in the bed with my husband and we were looking at pictures. I was scrolling on my phone and I got a text message from a friend that said, "Have you seen this photo?" And it was initially a picture of a dancer at Arena di Verona, which, by the way, is an amazing opera house. And yeah. I just want to say what a privilege it is to be asked to sing there. And I've been contracted there 2020, 2021 and 2022. And, you know, they did ask me to come back this year, but I wasn't able to because I had previous engagements. But I was looking at this photo and I said, "Well, what is this?" And my friend said, this is their production of Aida at Arena di Verona. And I said, "Oh, really?" And then I said, "Okay." I said, "Well, that's strange. You know, I didn't know that. That's weird." And then probably about a day or two later, then I saw, because I'm a fan. I'm a fan of Netrebko's, and I saw it on her page. And I also, other people sent it to me. And, you know, all I can say, and you know, people can say whatever they want to say. People will always say what they want to say.
Yeah,
and rightfully so.
Indeed.
Fine. You should be able to, you know. Hopefully it's not something that's hurtful. But what I said was, after I saw the photo, sorry, I'm all over the place, Laverne, excuse me.
No.
Thank you. What I said was that what I saw was blackface. To me, it was blackface. I understand people are like, "Ah, but you know, there's, it's just makeup. It's theater." I had a good friend of mine actually said, "Angel, it's just theater. What are you doing? You know, we wear makeup all the time." And I said that I didn't agree with it. I didn't, in my heart, I didn't feel that I could go and sing La Traviata to the best of my ability, knowing that, understanding where the makeup came from, what the tradition mm-hmm. stood for. I don't remember exactly what I said. I could probably find it on my phone somewhere.
No.
But to me, you know, Laverne, we're talking about La Traviata. We're talking about Il Trovatore. We've talked about La Boheme. None of those characters are black. And I know the audience can't see me, but I'm a 5 foot, 11 and a half, basically 6 foot tall, plus size black woman, dark skinned black woman. I have never been asked to change how I look to sing a role. I've played characters who are Parisian and dying of consumption. I know I don't look like I'm dying of consumption, you know, and, And if the audience has enough imagination to believe that I can be Mimi or that I can be Violetta, then surely a great singer, those great singers who come through Arena di Verona, don't necessarily need that makeup. That's how I feel. Yeah. That was just my heart. And I can understand, I totally understand the opposite side of it, though. I understand, you know, someone saying, no, Angel, you know, they're taking it too seriously. That's not, the blackface is totally different. You know, the makeup doesn't look like that. But to me, in my heart, it didn't need to be done. And that's not a fault on anyone, really. It's just what I felt. You know, you and I both, we grew up in church. We've talked about our moms in church and how they are, and you've told me that your mom will go into church and read people for filth, and you know,
absolutely, you know,
and we—that's part of our culture. That's part of who we are. There are people who don't like church. There are people who will get mad because you grew up in church. But what am I supposed to do? Change that? Because that's my heart. That's where I am. That's me. And you know, I got off of social media because there was no reason to argue. There was no whatever sparked that kind of conversation. I didn't want to be a part of that because there was some of it that was really ugly and to Miss Bunbury that was very disrespectful, and I wasn't going to have any part of that.
So what I will say to you is that what was lovely on social media, I follow a number of, you know, opera singers and people who are just sort of in the classical world. A lot of singers appreciated you making the decision that you made not to sing at Arena di Verona, that there was a lot of love and there was a lot of understanding. And I think a lot of people didn't fully understand until you had that moment, right? That I think you, in withdrawing, even though it was just a very personal decision for you, that you brought more attention to that, the fact that this is still happening in opera. And it's something that a lot of people do believe should be reconsidered. I'm one of those people who thinks it should be reconsidered, that we don't need the dark makeup for Aida. I don't think we need to do that anymore. So what was beautiful, you know, a year later, I think you should hear, is that I think it... part of the conversation that happened, I think, was necessary and a very positive one because you made that decision. And I know that's not necessarily what you intended. You were just like, you couldn't sing there. You wouldn't have been able to give your best, but there have been positive things that have come out of it, and you should know that.
Yes, and I do want to say the production they're doing this year doesn't have blackface. Mm. You know, they said it was the decision, I believe, of the director who decided not to go that route with it and to change it, you know, and you know, opera is such a fun make-believe place. Yeah. And I understand that makeup is part of the make-believe. I have makeup on right now. I have fake eyelashes and all of this. You know, I forgot the nails, but I got makeup on. You know, my hair is straightened right now. And it's not like, you know, this is not how my husband Adam sees me. He will not see me like this tonight. I will look very different this evening.
Okay. But opera is, I mean, people are singing everything. It's there's something kind of ridiculous and wonderful about opera that I love.
You know, I'm just, thank you for asking me about, specifically about that. Because I've shied away from talking about it just because I don't want to have any arguments or heavy discussions about things. I mean, I don't know. I love you, Laverne, and I enjoy spending time with you. You're a wonderful person. You've been, ever since I met you in 2019, you've just been such a blessing to me. You know, that's all I have to say. I mean, we could wrap on that if you wanted to, but I love you so much.
I love you too, darling. I end the podcast with the question, what else is true? And it comes from my therapy, my trauma resilience therapy, and the idea of both and. When life is challenging us, when things are really, really hard, we can focus on that thing that's hard and difficult, or we can choose to focus on the things that give us strength, the things that give us hope, the things that help us get through. And so for you today, Angel Joy Blue, what else is true? That rhymed.
What else is true is just that... Oh, Laverne, don't get mad at me. I'm not trying to be preachy. God loves you. God loves you. God loves your audience. God loves you. And I don't know what is true. It's just that I'm blessed. I'm thankful. And there's a lot of hard things happening in the world. Just a lot of difficulty, a lot of things that are hard to just get through. But, you know, knowing that there's a God in heaven who loves us for me, that's everything.
Yeah. What I would say to those people out there who are not necessarily religious, because I don't consider myself a religious person, but I consider myself a spiritual person. Mm-hmm. I think it's believing in something bigger than you and a power that is greater than you, I think it's been very essential for my life. It's been very necessary. And I know I left the church, but I never left God. Yes. I never, ever had a moment. I've never, ever had a moment in my life where I doubted the presence of God in my life.
Beautiful.
I have issues with religion, but I've never had issues with God and what God is doing and how God is operating. And I haven't always understood the path that my higher power wants for me. But I'll understand it better by and by.
Yes, by and by.
Yes. Yes, honey. I will understand it better by and by. That is a great note to end on. You're such a beautiful light and so talented. And I love talent. And you and your heart is just is as big as your talent. I love you, Angel.
Love you too. Thank you.
Thank you. Angel Blue. Just to think about a voice, particularly the soprano voice, that sound, that frequency, is just the most beautiful thing in the world to me. Do you feel that? That soprano frequency, that note, that phrase, that vulnerability, that the fragility of the human voice, the power at the same time, the fragile with the powerful. I just love it. I love it. And I love Angel and her commitment to the gift and to the craft and to study. I love the idea of being a perpetual student. I feel like a perpetual student of life, of art. And perhaps that's a life lesson as accomplished as we all can be. We are still students. Historically, opera singers too have been very mysterious and very aloof. And Angel is the opposite of that. Her transparency and her sort of sharing her struggles is something that is so necessary, because it's important for us to know that everybody struggles, that everybody goes through something. And I think the lesson for me is endless possibility through hard work. And it's, you know, I don't want to like lean into bootstrap narratives or anything like that, but I think there's just something wonderful about working hard and enjoying the process of working hard, doing something that you love. You know, hard work doing something you hate is terrible. It's a terrible thing. But when you love something and you really want to be good at it, you know, the work just comes because you're just so passionate. Angel and I think share that in common, the passion for the work and the passion for getting better. Music from San Francisco Opera's Il Trovatore is courtesy of Angel Joy Blue, and a big thank you to the Philadelphia Orchestra for providing the audio of Angel singing D'Amor Suale Rose from Il Trovatore by Verdi, which she performed with them in September of 2020. She'll be back with the Philadelphia Orchestra next June 2024. Thank you for listening to The Laverne Cox Show. Please rate, review, subscribe, and share with everyone you know. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter, aka X, and TikTok at Laverne Cox, and on Facebook at Laverne Cox For Real. Until next time, stay in the love. The Laverne Cox Show is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from Shondaland Audio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
You dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.